Agenda paper 10 relates to IFRS 11 issues. The purpose of this paper is to provide outreach results on various implementation issues regarding IFRS 11. In the outreach request, we summarized five principal issues raised in the submission, and we also asked whether the stakeholders have additional issues. And we categorized all issues seen in the paper. Category A relates to the classification of a joint arrangement, and Category B relates to a specific topic regarding the classification of a joint arrangement, which is a change in the classification of a joint arrangement. Category C relates to the recognition and measurement of a joint arrangement. Category D relates to a specific topic regarding the recognition and measurement of a joint arrangement, that is, how to recognize and measure a joint arrangement with respect to losing joint control or acquiring interest while retaining a joint control. Category E relates to other issues. As you can see in the table on pages from 23 to 26 of this paper, we have received 21 additional issues on top of the five issues we already identified in the outreach request. So what we would like to ask the committee at this meeting is how we should respond to these issues. For example, we could undertake further outreach on the additional issues, and also we could focus on a particular type of issues as a matter of priority.
So the question is, what next?
I guess including also the option of allowing practice to coalesce in either some or all of the areas that we've been looking at.
Tony?
I think the looking at the long list of issues, and I know from speaking to people there are probably other issues. Some of them, I think, probably get to areas where people should just get on and apply judgment and move ahead. There are some issues that I think demonstrate two particular tensions within IFRS 11. One of them is around other facts and circumstances, because I suspect when people first thought about the possibility of getting a joint operation within an entity, they thought, well, that's probably not going to happen very often, because the contractual arrangements might not lead you there. But then other facts and circumstances, I think people use that to get a lot of things into the notion that there's a joint operation within an entity. And that, I think, from my experience, is where the measurement issues and the recognition issues become more difficult. Because you could end up with a situation where you have, let's say, a 50% interest in the entity, but the contracts expose you to different rights and obligations, or rights and obligations around the assets and liabilities in different proportions to your interest in the entity. And the accounting for that can be quite difficult. And it just seems to me that's where the tension arises. And if there was a something that could be fixed to address it, one option would be to say to remove other facts and circumstances. So you wouldn't very often get a joint operation within an entity unless the contracts were extremely clear in expressing the rights and obligations, which would take some of the measurement issues off the table. Or you could say, well, the measurement issues all relate to the potential inconsistencies, so you could go for something like you can apply proportionate consolidation. Because I suspect that's where practice might end up coalescing, rather than trying to account for separate rights and obligations and sort of what do you do with the rump and that sort of thing. So a couple of ideas, but one thing that I guess I'd say is sort of an overarching point, seems to be the most important to me, is that the board has picked off a couple of issues and addressed them. I just think continuing to address these issues piecemeal is potentially the worst of all worlds, trying to pick up specific answers. So if there is an overarching fix, fine. But if not, don't keep picking up issues individually.
I think that would
preference would be for some sort of holistic solution that doesn't pick up the things piecemeal.
That would be an argument for allowing practice to coalesce. Okay. Andrew?
Yes, we've got 26 issues, the 5 questions and the 21 additional issues. We do need to do some categorization, what's been done, and some prioritization. Yeah, there's probably a relatively small number where I think the standard is basically pretty clear. In some cases, the issue makes it clear, the standard is clear, but people don't like the answer or asking for an amendment rather than interpretive guidance. So we can perhaps deal with those fairly regularly. There are others acquiring an interest in a joint operation which have either been addressed or just been considered as part of ED 2012-7, so kind of dealt with. There are a few on obtaining outright control over what was formerly a joint operation, which is not actually a new, some of these aren't really new issues. We've had concepts of jointly controlled operations before, and some of those would meet the definition of a business, and entities could obtain outright control, so not a new issue. It doesn't invalidate the issue, but it's not new, and if there's a home for that, it possibly it's in the IFRS 3 post-implementation review process, possibly. I think the 5 original questions do feel like they should be the highest priority, so basically it's the classification assessment, particularly the other facts and circumstances test, and the mechanics of debits and credits of joint operation accounting, where the operation is housed in the entity. So, but I've got mixed feelings on the way forward. It'd be nice to get some clearer guidance, I think, on those issues, but we have to face the reality that a number of entities have been through a difficult process already. They have determined their approach, agreed that with their auditors, and they're moving forward. And any attempt to disrupt that practice at this stage, I think, would be inevitably rather controversial. So I wouldn't necessarily use the phrase allowing practice to coalesce, but allow practice to develop and come back to this in a few years' time in the perhaps in the IFRS 11 post-implementation review process.
I'm easy on verbs.
Laurent?
Indeed, the list is long, but I think that by knocking off some key issues, you will be knocking off many of the questions that have arisen. And I would urge the committee, if we were to address priorities, I think there are 2 priorities. The first one is to understand how the criteria, other facts and circumstances apply, and indeed whether it should based on it should consider only contractual and legal enforceable terms, or whether you should input as well substance analysis into the assessment of and also whether those of facts and circumstances, what's the purpose of it? Is it to assess still the direct right in assets, in direct obligations of an entity? So there is currently a problem understanding how to implement that criterion. And I think that if we have a clear idea of how far do you push implementation of the other facts and circumstances criteria, this would help a lot understanding what are GVs, what are GOs. So that's the first priority. The second priority is, and it links to understanding what is the accounting. It's understanding what does it mean, in effect, to account for direct rights and direct obligations when, in fact, those rights and assets and obligations are legally owned by a separate entity. And so, and I think that Agenda Paper 11 illustrates the issue very well about what does it mean to account for direct rights and how to account for direct obligations. So I think these should be the 2 priorities we would have to deal with very urgently. And coming back to the first point, it's my first priority about how to implement this assessment of other facts and circumstances. I think that your outreach brought in a fact pattern, a real fact pattern, with the French SCCV. And this is a real life example where currently people struggle to conclude whether it's a joint operation or a joint venture. And the answer will entirely depend on how far we push implementation of those other facts and circumstances, and whether we take into account an element of substance or not into that assessment. So it's an illustration of the intuitive rate. Those ACGVs are not just the only case that exists, not just in France. You may have other project entities elsewhere. I know in Germany you had the case in Arger. So it's not just circumscribing to one jurisdiction.
Okay, I have a light down here at the regulator corner. Marie, is that you?
Yeah. At regulator, we fear that there might be major diversity in practice regarding IFRS 11 and regarding the other factor and circumstances and the way it's assessed. And the question is it only legal term or not? And the other issue we are really facing at the moment and struggling with is that in the standard for the moment there is nothing about the accounting, and some might consider that the joint operation is the same accounting as the proportionate accounting, which we are not so sure. So I think, as Laurent said, in Europe we are really facing major issue with the standard, so we really appreciate if we can have guidance or something as soon as possible. Yeah.
Luca, did you want to come in on this?
Oh yes, thanks. I think that the reading of these two papers, Agenda Paper 10 and 11, provide, I would say, quite a dramatic picture of the situation. There are more than 25 items that have been recollected as critical. There is an internal very relevant debate regarding which is the accounting treatment that I have to recognize, to apply in order to recognize the portion of the assets and liabilities, or better, as Laurent said, my direct rights and obligations. At the same time, what I am experiencing in the real world is that there are different views inside the same entities between or among the several partners. I have a couple of cases in which we think that is a joint operation due to other factors, circumstances, and the other partners think no, it's a joint venture. So I think that it's clear that we have to do something. There are three mainstream that, in my opinion, has to be fixed very well. Other factors, circumstances, and all the issues regarding the classification between joint venture and joint operation. The second one is the accounting treatment in the initial recognition of the direct interest in the rights and in the assets and the obligation. And what next? Which is the accounting treatment in the case in which there is a change from a joint operation to joint venture, or rather than to joint operation to subsidiaries and whatever. So I think that the effort made with this outreach has been a good exercise, as indicated, which are the items that we have to focus on. The real problem is that the standard is in place, there is a big diversity in practice in the application, and I think that we should do something in very few time in order to avoid that this different practice will become the industry practices.
Anne MacArthur has joined the conference.
Therefore, I don't know if we are, or better, in my mind there is also the option to suspend the application of the standards for a while in order to fix these items that are very relevant, that constitute the standards before to go ahead with the application of the standards. I'm very, very scared. discouraged regarding the application of the standards with so many items and so many doubts around the world. I think that we really should think about the idea to, I don't know, say to withdraw, but at least to suspend the application of the standards.
Noted. We just got a notice that someone named Ann MacArthur has joined this conversation.
Yes, I'm sorry, I just was waiting for the gentleman to finish speaking. I was given this telephone number and PIN number. I was expecting to speak to Nicole Johnson from the IFRS.
Well, you got the right place, but you got the wrong people.
Right, okay. I will try and get in touch with Nicole separately. Okay.
Now, we're thrilled to have you listen in, but I don't think you will be.
I will bow out. Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Ann MacArthur has left the conference.
Okay. With that, I'm losing track here. Martin, did you want to come in?
Yeah. Okay. Before we heard that some companies might use facts and circumstances to end up into a joint operation. However, unfortunately, and I have to stress this, there are other companies who definitely do not want to end up into a joint operation. However, they have to do so because, for example, they have by-production. And if you have by-production, you might assume that there is a certain chemical plant or whatever, and you have only two partners. One takes the good, the other takes the by-product or whatever. You end up into, by definition, facts and circumstances, by a joint operation. And the question, in general, this is in the setup of limited liability. So the entity itself has the legal form of a limited liability. And then the question really is, and I think we have to focus on this, what is the right consolidation principle? Is it equity stake, or is it any, well, proportional volume multiplied by price, expected, actual, or whatever? And I guess specifically regulators, currently, as well as preparers and auditors, have the challenge that they do not really know what is the real appropriate approach to deal with this. And this, according to my mind, is a very...
Nicole, have joined the conference.
Sorry. Nicole, you're on the IFRS Interpretations Committee call. You'll have the caller you were talking to is dialed in and dialed out again. You need to go back through the operators, I'm afraid.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Nicole has left the conference.
And therefore, I guess this question is of predominant importance.
Okay. Let's just keep going around. Joanna?
I guess I am concerned at the way that this is going, I'll be honest, in that this is a new standard that is just being applied, and as with all new standards, people have, how do I apply it, and I've got to learn how to apply it, and then a year later, it all seems to bed itself down. And your comment as to whether you've got the verb right or not, but to allow it to coalesce, I have to admit, I'm on that page. I understand what other people are saying, and I admit that I do not see it, the vast discussions in practice, but it really does worry me that we as an interpretations committee are saying with this brand new standard or just about, being applied newly, that we want to make all these interpretations around it and need to fix what the ISB have just put out.
Say long?
Looking at that number of issues, I think the issues need to be prioritized and potentially clustered into subcategories, such as issues where guidance is sufficient, issues where interpretation guidance is required, issues that need to amendment, etc. Before going.
Reinhardt? Coming from a jurisdiction where we've been applying IFRS 11 since the beginning of the year, I would agree with the comments that others have made that the most difficult area tended to be around the other facts and circumstances test. And what we found is that more operations, joint arrangements were classified as joint operations through the other facts and circumstances test than we had originally perhaps envisaged. And then the follow-on effect in terms of how do you account for your rights to the assets and to the obligations, that you know, was a difficult issue as well, which in practice people have coalesced around something that is more akin to view two in the next paper I know that we will talk about. But that's, as I say, from a practical perspective, that's been the one area we've had the most discussion about.
Did somebody, I've lost track. John, did you want to come in?
Yeah. I mean, I think we clearly have to prioritize the issues, and I think the original questions around the other facts and circumstances are the right, are the priority issues. It seems that a number of these additional issues that have been raised are ones where we could let practice evolve and see if things coalesce or if things decoalesce and go, if that's a word, fly off in different directions. But I do think there's other facts and circumstances, and the questions around whether it's based upon contractual rights and obligations, or whether it's a sort of a look-through proportion consolidation, is really a critical issue. And I think if we don't do something, or if we don't provide some guidance around that, then we are going to find a vast array of interpretations on the issue.
Alan is fond of saying that when IFRS 3 came out, there were 78 issues or something like that, and after they got a bunch of people around the table, it boiled down to 6 or 7, and they made 3 changes, or orders of magnitude here. How do you see the, well, I guess the first question I would have for Alan is that process of boiling the issues down one that you think this committee should do, or do you have somebody else already in mind?
Whenever you go on a hunting expedition, you're going to catch stuff. We didn't. We actually went and asked for issues, and we're given them. And I think one of them was, I'm trying to find it here, was if, say, you know, Joanna and Tony had a joint arrangement together, do they have to sit down at a table and agree on what the specification is? And you sit there and say, no, you're kidding me. No, you don't. And I think there are some of these issues that I've seen the analysis that said, you know, well, that is an interesting factor, but it depends. And so I think boiling them down into different types of categories is very important. I think we have a couple of complications here. One is the deferral by Europe for 1 year has caused, I believe, a problem for us, because it has clearly been in place in South Africa, New Zealand, Australia, Canada, all the way through for a longer period of time. And so they've and the reason it's important is that we had a complaint to our due process oversight committee when earlier this year, mm-hmm. late last year, earlier this year, we informally developed and then distributed to the major firms and some standard setters and others some education material that we thought might help with clarification of the application of other factors, circumstances and the accounting. And we had a formal complaint saying we have started to do this, apply the standard. We have no idea what's in the education material because we haven't seen it, but don't you dare do anything, because they were going to complain that we were doing some standard setting through the back door. And their message was very loud and clear, is that they had already applied the standard and they did not want us coming in later to upset things. This is a tricky balance, because if we've got a clear problem, we should address those clear issues. But this is also a situation, imagine now if we turned around, the door's open, there are many more joint operations than we have anticipated. If you read every staff paper when the standard was developed, it said we expect this to be rare, and it's clearly not rare. The doors got open wider than we thought. The entities are doing that already. By the time we act, you'll have already been through the first phases. So the question I've got really, and by the way, there are some other issues. A lot of these issues to do with the equity method. They've been around for a long time. how many times we keep coming and fixing something on the equity method. It's probably more important because that door's slightly wider. We're now getting more issues to do with joint operations in the equity method. Because the door's wider, there's accounting requirements in the next paper. You know, if we've got a really nice, clean 50-50 investment, 50-50 everything, then qualitatively you might get similar answers with equity method or joint rights. When they go apart, it matters. So our choice is almost to try and close the door, and then a lot of the accounting problems go away, which is kind of nice, or we acknowledge that the door's open, and with the choice is either in the short term to try and get some clarification, we're going to upset people if we do that, or we're actually due theoretically, depends on how we define this, that our post-implementation review, it's 2 years after implementation of the standard, and it's been in place for well over a year and a half in many places around the world. It's Europe, it's slow. So theoretically, we have enough of a database to actually start to think about a post-implementation review earlier rather than later, and by earlier I mean next year, sort of towards the end of next year. But the question is whether that's as fast as we can go anyway, because if we're to look at all these issues, the first thing is you'll have to send somebody away to do the analysis, put into categories, and this is just, I know it's been a bit of a review, but our post-implementation review is a worldwide, here's a request information, public, and we get a comprehensive analysis of issues coming back. So it's tricky. I wish I just had a simple answer, but I think we have a problem in that, you know, when Martin says, you know, just because you have a supply agreement, apparently you have to. The only way it has to account for is a joint operation. I guess it's because the drafting in here on paragraph B30 says that in such circumstances, I've lost it here. In such circumstances, I think it can lead to arranging classified as joint operation. This will be the case when other facts and circumstances give you rights to the assets and obligations or liabilities. Now, I don't know whether the fact that you've got a supply agreement, people are reading that to say you must do because you have, but this is where some interpretation might help, but I suspect that we're going to get quite a few people who've already interpreted it liberally because they choose to, or they are reading these words legitimately. If we close that door, we're going to have a bit of a problem. And look, you can't suspend a standard that's been in place globally for a long time, for a year and a half.
I'm also a little hesitant because the most common remark I've heard around the table is that we need to deal with the softest part of the standard, which is other facts and circumstances. And that inevitably would lead to, well, which other? And that's one that we have not been notably successful with. Scott and then Vincent.
I've been surprised in sitting in the U.S. at the amount of chatter I've heard regarding joint operations versus joint ventures. And the majority, I shouldn't say the majority, the most often issue is this other facts and circumstances, and it's being applied by some, or it's being considered to be applied by some, in a way that I thought was entirely not intended from the standard, which is, to me, a way that says other facts and circumstances can cause joint operation accounting, even if you don't have rights and obligations. I think that's the issue. To me, it's clear that the other facts and circumstances that would result in joint operation accounting are other facts and circumstances that create enforceable rights and obligations, which is, I think, the question one in here. I'm surprised at the number of questions I've heard and the amount of talk I've heard that seem to surround that, but if that really is a big issue, I told people I think I know the answer to that. That may be something that we can discuss, whether you need to have enforceable rights and obligations created by the other facts and circumstances in order for that to push you into joint operations county.
Simple rejection, isn't it?
What's that?
Simple agenda rejection.
Only if there's broad agreement. I mean, like I said, I've told people that
the only issue that we're going to talk about.
I've told people that I think I know the answer to that, but other people seem to have different views. So I don't know that it would be as easy as that.
Vincent, and then John.
Thank you. I wanted just to say that when you have decided to postpone the mandatory application of this standard, this was because a number of stakeholders anticipated some difficulties in implementation of the standard, and the idea was also to benefit from this deferral of 1 year to clarify some issues and regarding the standard, in particular regarding IFRS 11, and I think that we would appreciate, as Marie said, very much if that committee or the ESB could provide some additional guidance to the standard to ease the implementation of it.
I mean, it seems to me that the last sentence of D30 should be crystal clear, that this will be the case when other facts and circumstances give the parties rights to the assets and obligations for the liabilities relating to the arrangement. So it seems that other facts and circumstances do not of themselves give you a right to proportionate consolidation. They give you rights to assets and obligations for liabilities, and therefore the facts and circumstances have to give you those, or otherwise you don't have a joint operation.
I noticed that Luca also raised the question of, well, what if you have two parties and one thinks it's a joint venture and one thinks it's a joint operation?
Yes.
I assume then that you just, Alan, each do your accounting based on what your assessment of the facts is.
We have many cases in the old I-31 where people reached, I know of one, where three parties reached three completely different conclusions.
There were only two choices.
No. One of the parties thought that one of the other parties was a non-controlling interest and therefore proportionately consolidated 50% of the 40%, so half of the 80%. So we had an equity method, one proportional consolidation of one part, and an equity, okay. equity method of the other. 50% in one case. Yeah.
Laurent Spree makes this better.
Please.
Coming back to that other facts and circumstances question, and listening to Scott and John, indeed, B30 points you to a case where other facts and circumstances demonstrate that you have direct rights to assets and obligations. But indeed, some believe that you need not necessarily be tied up to direct rights on assets and obligations, and you can use other facts and circumstances looking at the substance. And as I said, you have an illustration, a case that has been brought to your light, and to try to understand how do facts and circumstances should apply. And so this is why it would be extremely useful to provide guidance one way or the other to this type of issue, because I know that in practice for the classification of joint ventures and joint arrangements, that's the type of issue that comes up very often. Not just in the real estate industry, by the way.
Tony, and then I guess Marie wants to come in, and then I am going to wrap it up.
To sort of build on what John and Laurent said, I think a lot of the measurement issues arise because, as Alan said, the door was opened much wider than people thought it would. And the standard doesn't really provide
guidance on accounting in the circumstances where there's no direct rights to assets and liabilities, but you've used, to use Laurence's word, the substance. And I guess that's what I said right at the beginning. If we were to narrow that gap quite significantly by whether it's an agenda rejection or an amendment or whatever, that says actually this should result in enforceable rights to assets and obligations for specific liabilities, then I think it would take some of the measurement issues off the table. It may be unpopular with people that have already adopted it, I understand that, but it would significantly narrow the range of measurement issues that we're trying to address at the moment.
Marie, last word.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that because this paper is public and is provided different views, for example, even if Scott says that it should be based on unforeseeable terms when you assess other facts and circumstances, in the paper it's written that there is different view and that respondents express different views, so it will be really difficult to enforce anything on that based on this paper which is public now.
Okay, the message. That works for you at home, does
it? I didn't say it ever worked at home.
Okay. Perhaps predictably, the response that the staff has received is you need to prioritize. I think we've received a couple of messages about prioritizing, certainly around the issues that focus on other facts and circumstances. Tony mentioned the issues about measurement. I think one cut would be for the staff to look at it and say, how many of these could be solved with an agenda decision? How many of them, in contrast, need additional guidance in the form of examples or whatever form additional guidance would take? It does not seem to me reasonable for us to recommend that the board, before we do that work, either significantly amend the standard or certainly that the board delay it. I don't see those as possibilities right now. Alan?
Is there a fifth category in that? I didn't read these as unsolicited formal agenda requests. We did a search for information, so I think some of those in the category, I don't think we need to do much with, or we can simply, you know, if you want, we can, with the BizCom ones, we had the same thing. We did it privately, actually. We had a staff member just sifted through. We had small group meetings. We debated with the board members, and then we took what we thought were the 10 big issues, brought them back to Interpretations Committee. We ended up, I think, 5 narrow scope amendments proposed, 3 we finalised, or something like that. But this is just a far more public process with that.
The problem is, as Marie said, we asked.
We asked, but do you have to have I suppose you could reject and say, no, you don't have to talk to each other. But I'm not sure how.
No, I.
You know, there are some that are, I think, are blindingly obvious, I hope. It might be naive.
Yeah, I was going to say, they obviously weren't.
No.
Obvious to others around the table, so I'm not sure. I was just going to say, I mean, obviously there were 3 formal agenda submissions that did come in, which as part of this exercise, obviously we are in the process of considering. So I don't think there's anything that's formally come in that we've ignored. We are considering.
No, I don't think so.
In this. And so I would suggest that we pick up on the 2 main ones, which I think we've heard today, which is the other facts and circumstances and how that affects classification. And the other one is the measurements on in terms of joint operations, yes, particularly as there is the interrelationship between the two. Yeah, and I think it would be useful for the staff to identify ones that, I hesitate to say, don't rise to the level even of an agenda decision, but ones that we believe can be dealt with in some other way without using the terms blindingly obvious. Okay. So, as Don Kirk used to say, the staff has sufficient guidance, or if not sufficient, it's all you're going to get. So,